From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. About 1 in 10 working Americans has a job in the nonprofit sector. In fact, the nonprofit sector is the third largest in the U.S. after retail and manufacturing. According to CNN, quote, although the federal government and the press are focused on the plight of the big industries, airlines, hotels, cruise ships, nonprofits employ more people than many of these industries. Well, it's no wonder that nonprofits have been hit extraordinarily hard by the coronavirus crisis. Fundraisers have been canceled, cultural events postponed, and donations have precipitously dropped. But aside from being eligible to apply for loans from the flawed Paycheck Protection Program, there is no government relief for nonprofits. My guest is Betsy Leonda Wright. She's an assistant professor of sociology at LaSalle College and the board president of Class Action. Her books include The Color of Wealth, The Story Behind the U.S. Racial Wealth Divide, and Class Matters, Cross-Class Alliance Building for Middle-Class Activists. She's just authored a new booklet on nonprofits called Staffing the Mission, Improving Jobs in the Nonprofit Sector. Welcome to the program, Betsy.
It's great to be with you, Sonali.
So, as I'd mentioned, nonprofits are a huge sector of the economy, and like other sectors, possibly more so than other sectors, are reeling from the pandemic because, of course, fundraisers have been canceled. People have less money to give. How do you, and we're not seeing very much of this in the news, how are nonprofits being impacted by this economic crisis from the coronavirus?
Well, nonprofits, of course, have many different missions, and some are, in fact, getting a ton of business and donations. If you're in the business of emergency food provision, for example, then you're being stretched to the max, but also donors are stepping up. But at the other end of the spectrum, I would say some of the arts nonprofits are the hardest hit. The theater seasons are being canceled, and of course, nobody can go into museums or see live performance. So that's a sector where we may very well be about to see a shrinkage of an entire portion of our economy.
Some are saying that this could spell extinction for big sectors of the nonprofit industry. And that includes, you know, things like museums, but also public radio stations like mine.
Right. Everyone dependent on donations and foundation grants is scrambling, or fee for service for a service that's no longer being provided. Is everyone scrambling? And I think that the implications of what were already the weaknesses of the sector, and that's what we are writing about in the Staffing the Mission report, that if you already have staff who are so close to the bone, being paid so low, for example, not having health benefits, for example, being employed as a contractor and not as an employee, so that now you're not eligible for our nonprofit, for unemployment benefits, I mean, the practices that were already harming nonprofit employees are now making them even more vulnerable. So that's, yeah, just like people,
right,
who have a underlying health condition, now the coronavirus threatens you more. The nonprofits who already were on such tight budgets and skimping so much on their staff, that's going to be where the laid off employees are.
Now, we know, there's been, thankfully, a dialogue about how so-called essential workers like grocery workers were already deeply underpaid, and that this crisis has exposed that underbelly of what was already happening, but not as much as known as in terms of the nonprofit sector. People imagine the nonprofit sector, those who are outside it might imagine that it's a cushy sector. You know, while no one's making millions, everyone's sort of middle class, because, you know, if you're working as an administrator at a nonprofit, you're likely making a decent salary. But the truth is that people are making very little money. There's also very low or possibly non-existent levels of unionism or unionizing at nonprofits, right?
That's right. So unlike unionized workplaces, where there's the union can advocate for staff, unlike public sector, where there's government channels, legislative channel to go through if there's a funding shortage, the nonprofits who are dependent on foundation grants and donors, by and large, the employees do not have anyone advocating for them. And the management may very well want to give good benefits and pay good wages and do the whole personnel thing in a very humane way. But the practices, the way it's set up, the philanthropy sector's practices and that the relationship between nonprofits and the donors, those are set up to leave the nonprofit employees not just unprotected, but squeezed. There's a great article with a great title called The Nonprofit Starvation Cycle, of what nonprofits say to their funders, what the funders say to the back to the nonprofits, and how the staff end up with these just absurdly unlivable wages and benefits and unworkably long hours.
So your booklet that you wrote, Staffing the Mission, Improving Jobs in the Nonprofit Sector, give me a sense of just what the sector looks like, what jobs in the sector look like, and even what the demographics of the workforce in the nonprofit sector looks like.
Yeah, so we see the crisis of bad, crummy nonprofit jobs, which is just epidemic in the sector. We see this as a gender equity issue, and especially a racial equity issue, because who is it who tends to have, nonprofit jobs in general? The bulk of the sector is female dominated, with lots of female leadership, which is great, but also in terms of who does direct care work or provides services or administers or does bookkeeping for nonprofits. It's heavily women, and at the in the bottom rungs, it's disproportionately women of color. So, the old image of the upper class woman who doesn't really need to make a living, so she does her charitable work and they pay her some pin money and it doesn't really matter that it's very small. There's a few people like that, but that's out of date if it was ever true. And instead, we have people who mostly don't have well-off family members, many who are supporting families on their nonprofit salary or wages. And we surveyed 82 nonprofits for the report, and then we interviewed a lot of them whose stories were either especially good or especially awful. We heard from one where most of the money was going to the top management, and this is an arts organization, and the staff at the bottom, there was constant turnover because people just couldn't sustain it. People loved the mission but couldn't sustain it to stay in the job. They had to go get some other kind of job, and they were paid basically just over the limit to get SNAP, for food stamps, housing assistance. They were paid poverty wages, but not quite poverty enough to be eligible for public benefit. And of course, it's all very ironic because you have anti-poverty organizations,
right,
who are creating poverty in their own employees.
Right. Most nonprofits serve a mission. Most of their missions are centered around equity or justice, mm-hmm, or some variation thereof. And sadly, we see a disconnect between the stated mission and how it's realized or actualized within the organizations themselves. This is unfortunately something that does lead to high turnover within the nonprofit sector. I mentioned a little bit about how big this sector is, but let's step back and remind our audience. I mean, we're not talking about a small sliver of the employment, of the economy in terms of jobs, right? We're talking about a huge sector.
Yeah, the nonprofit sector as a whole is about 20% of the economy.
Wow.
So, 1 in 5 jobs is in the nonprofit sector. But of course, that includes large institutions that have their own funding streams, such as hospitals and universities. So we're not, that's not who we researched and wrote about.
So you carve out some exceptions in terms of hospitals and universities.
Yeah, I think that's a different story. And of course, public workers are a different story. We're talking about nonprofits, big and small. We surveyed the range, but ones that where a lot of the revenue comes from either donors, individual people giving charitable donations, or foundation grants. So that's the vulnerability that we're looking at, that when that's where you're going for your money, you're often chronically short. Because we're not blaming nonprofit managers. I've been an executive director paying too little and giving too little benefits. And I know a lot of the critical comments we heard were from executive directors or other managers, as well as staff, saying, you know, I just can't stand it that we don't give family health benefits, or that we have to keep certain people on as contractors instead of employees with employee benefits. So it really is the way that the funding is set up, everywhere from the amount, the total amount that's being given, and that needs to change. Philanthropy needs to change. The legal requirements on how much a foundation needs to give out every year, that needs to change. The law hasn't been changed since 1967. So this is something that could be a public policy issue. There are people advocating that you only have to disperse 5% a year, and that includes your own operating expenses.
Right. And we just, in fact, talked about this on a recent interview we did about billionaire wealth, because a lot of billionaires give money, put them in charitable trusts, and then it's sort of warehoused. They get their tax breaks, but the money isn't spent. A lot of giving from foundations to nonprofits, unfortunately, also puts a lot of, you know, attaches a lot of strings to the workers at those nonprofits, right? I mean, as someone who works in the nonprofit industry, I've sought grants, and over again, you have grants that essentially say straight up that they do not want the money to be used for operational costs. In other words, salaries of workers. And this is a huge problem.
Yeah, there's a label in the field of nonprofits and philanthropy called overhead aversion, that if you're like, we want our money, our donations to go directly to serving people, so directly to the mission. We want to be as close to 100% funding for the impact. So we don't do, you know, quote unquote overhead. We don't pay the rent. We don't pay the bookkeeper. We don't, you know, we don't pay anybody who cleans the building. We just want how many kids are you educating? How many meals are you serving? How many arts performances are you putting on? Whatever the mission is. And that's ridiculous. And there's many wise people in the philanthropy sector who are saying, just stop that. That stop having overhead aversion. Stop judging a nonprofit by that magical percent. You're supposed to have as low as possible percent spent on quote unquote overhead and fundraising. And we wouldn't do this in the for-profit sector. Like, you don't walk into the coffee shop and say, okay, I'm going to pay for the beans and I'll pay the barista, because obviously they have to do it. But no, I'm not going to pay for, you know, the maintenance of those machines. I'm not going to pay for the rent, and I'm not going to pay for the person who sweeps up the place at night. That would be ridiculous. You'd be laughed out of the store. So why is that the standard thing? But that's incredibly common, that we only pay for this. We're giving you a restricted grant, and sometimes the overhead limits are as low as 10% or 15%. But even if it's 20%, which is relatively rare, you've got expenses. And to run a good organization that achieves its mission, you need computers that work. You know, you need to have enough staff to take care of the organization and not just provide the services.
Now, the survey that you did in your report, for your report, Staffing the Mission, how widespread is the dissatisfaction among workers in the nonprofit sector? And what are they most dissatisfied about?
Great question. Yeah, we didn't only get negative ratings. We were asking, in the survey, we asked for perceptions of fairness. So there are other wage surveys that have already been done about what is the wage level, who does have benefits. We got a little information about that, but mostly it was people like, do you feel like the way that compensation is done in your nonprofit is fair or unfair. And the greatest, of course, there's widespread discontent with pay levels. Obviously, that was a minority of people said the pay levels were fair. But it was actually really surprising to us. We ended up writing a lot about the process of setting pay in the report. We have a lot of recommendations that nonprofits can take. Because the biggest single discontent was about transparency. That, you know, a lot of people who work for nonprofits, they understand that there's not unlimited funding and it's not going to be such a high paying job. But the fact that they don't know who decides or what time of year it'll be decided, there's these secret negotiations with some staff and not with others. They discover these inequities. There was just this number of negative comments in the comment section of the survey, and also the vitriol, the anger and upset, like people discovering that someone else in their same position was making more because they negotiated a special salary when they were coming in. Or they were assuming that everyone's low paid, but then they discover that the top management actually there's a very big internal ratio. And also that there's no explicit process. How do you get promoted here? You know, the hiring process where you have to say what salary do you expect when you're an applicant. That's one of our simplest recommendations, is put salary ranges into job notices. Everybody, even if you're very strapped, we have a section called if the spirit is willing but the revenue is weak, ways you can improve things for your employees, even if you can't instantly up the amount of benefits or raise the pay a lot. And that's one of them, is it just really shouldn't be a mystery. People are so upset at lack of transparency. They want it to be really explicit. Who decides, who gets to have input. And you know, you don't have to reveal everyone's pay level to start gathering input on, you know, what should be the principles of pay setting. If there's a limited pool, you know, right. How should raises be determined, that everyone in an organization can give input on the process level.
So going back to what you were saying earlier about the issue of racial disparity, and even how this is a female-dominated field, which sadly goes hand-in-hand with low pay, as we see in many other female-dominated sectors, what are some of the ways in which that can be rectified within the nonprofit sector? Because a lot of the missions that justice-based organizations try to fulfill is to further the cause of racial and or gender justice. Why not start within the organizations themselves?
That's right. Well, as you know, we are seeing an amazing upswelling of the leadership of progressive people of color, especially women of color. And a lot of people are saying, oh, look at this surge of African-American women leadership. So there's just this enormous pool of talent and idealism surging up and running into trouble with funding and with keeping people, making it a career path in the sector. So some of my favorite organizations that Class Action has worked with around this report, like Change Philanthropy and Fund the People. I don't know if you know the nonprofit AF blog, that they're some of the best organizations working on this have one straightforward request of foundations, which is multi-year unrestricted operating grants. So trust-based philanthropy. So there's a great acronym by the leader in this field, Boulay, says that's called My God, multi-year general operating dollars, My God. So they're like, if you are a donor or a philanthropist or a foundation and you care about racial equity, start giving My God. I love that. So that this scrutiny of like, well, exactly what are you going to do with our dollars as opposed to your other dollars? And you know, we're gonna require a report every 6 months. Some people say the report sometimes the pay to the person writing the report exceeds the value of the grant. Sometimes there's just very fussy forms to fill out and benchmarks to meet. And I understand where funders are coming from because, of course, there have been scams that Wounded Warriors, Veterans Organization, the money was not going to the veterans. And so, of course, you have to do due diligence. Are these real, you know, people really doing their mission? So that's not a problem. But mostly the funders know these are real organizations doing their best and with the resources they have. And so just saying, okay, we trust you, here's some money, you know, we'll see you in 3 years, that being a racial equity move, as well as just something that would free up a lot of time that's now being spent on grant proposals and grant reports in general in the whole sector, but in particular, these startups, younger nonprofits that don't have the track record with longstanding funding sources yet.
Betsy, where can people get a hold of this report, especially those within the sector that would either like to share it with their managers or maybe their managers themselves who see the need for improvement?
Yes, so it's the PDF is available for free on the Class Action website. So Class Action is www.classism.org, classism.org. So if you go to programs and staffing the mission, and when you go to, you also can just Google staffing the mission because I don't think there's anything else called that. And the report comes up, and we also have a survey there. We'd like to hear from any of your listeners who have either a good or bad experience with a nonprofit job, and or anyone who has ideas for how can nonprofits make things better for their employees, and what should funders be doing differently.
So we'll also post a direct link to the report from our website. Betsy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's really my pleasure. It's always good to talk to you, Sonali.
My guest has been Betsy Leonda Wright. She is an assistant professor of sociology at LaSalle College and the board president of Class Action. Her books include The Color of Wealth, The Story Behind the U.S. Racial Wealth Divide, and Class Matters, Cross-Class Alliance Building for Middle-Class Activists. She's authored a new booklet on nonprofits called Staffing the Mission, Improving Jobs in the Nonprofit Sector. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.